This is All Things Considered on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. The approach of the 2020 presidential election, just 2 months away now, has many reflecting back to election night, November 2016, when the man who was elected president did not receive the majority of the popular vote. And that's not the first time that's happened. It's because of the Electoral College, which has been part of the presidential election process since the beginning of our country. Ahead of the election, we're taking your questions about the way our government works, and this week, why do we have the Electoral College? Co-host of Civics 101, Nick Capodice, is with me now to answer that question. Hey, Nick.
Hey, Peter. How are you doing?
Doing well, thank you. So, Nick, give us the basics of the Electoral College before we dive deep. What is it?
Yeah, well, the Electoral College has no a cappella singing group. It has no dormitories. It's not a place. It's just the system by which we elect the president, wherein each state has a certain number of electoral votes. And those votes are given to the winner of the plurality of votes in that state. All the votes for your state go to one candidate or another, no matter how close it was in your state. And the number of electoral votes your state has is the number of people you have in Congress. So here in New Hampshire, we have two people in the House plus two senators. We have four electoral votes.
And who came up with this system and why did they think it was necessary?
This was the creation of Alexander Hamilton, Broadway star. Hamilton and others created the Electoral College as a bulwark, as a barrier between the people and the vote for the president. There was a great fear, honestly, amongst our framers of democracy giving the people too much power. They sometimes referred to it as mobocracy. Because what if the people were woefully uneducated and they were duped by someone running for president? There had to be a collection of, and these were just men at the time, at our founding, men of virtue who could recognize the virtue in others to prevent the mischief of the people not knowing what they were doing.
And did the founders anticipate what we'd have in 2020, a two-party system?
They did and they didn't. They didn't call them parties back then. There was, though, a true fear of factions, which became our two-party system. Factions, our framers were terrified of them, large groups of people who vote one way or the other. And the reason they were afraid of it is that many of them themselves had suffered the fallout of civil wars in England due to these factions. The most famous Federalist paper, Federalist 10, that's James Madison talking about the danger of factions in America, but no matter what you do, they are going to happen.
So who benefits from the Electoral College? Does it benefit one party over another?
Well, historically, it always has benefited one party or person or region over the other. I'd like to play a clip of Alvin Tillery. He's a wonderful political science professor at Northwestern University, explaining about the effect of the three-fifths compromise in the Constitution. And that is the compromise which counted enslaved Americans as three-fifths of a person to count towards how many representatives a state gets.
So that apportionment process, if you're a Southern slaveholder like Madison, counting your slaves who can't vote in that process is going to tip the scales of not only the House of Representatives, but also presidential elections the Southerners. And this is why so many of our first seven presidents, I think four or five of the first seven, are Southern slave-owning men.
And to add on to that is a bit of a kicker. There have been papers published, and there is evidence that currently, in a close race, the Electoral College does benefit the GOP. One of the reasons is you look at a state like California, that's got 39.5 million people. They have 55 electoral votes. The 22 smallest states in the United States combined have a lower population than California, and they have 96 votes. And those smaller population states tend to vote Republican. So yes, the GOP does have a lot more power when it comes to close elections.
So do electors have to vote their way? The state says they do?
They didn't used to, Peter, but they do now. It used to be this system was created to prevent, you know, the people having the full say. However, electors can now, as of a very recent Supreme Court decision, be required to vote for who won the plurality of votes in your state, making the whole point of it initially, frankly, a bit moot.
So what do you think the founders would think of the way the Electoral College functions now?
That's a great question, Peter. I think I will leave that to Alvin Tillery once more.
But let's be explicit. The framers would be appalled by the way the Electoral College works today, right? The entire point for them was a bulwark against tyranny. The entire point for them was to have electors being faithless, right? Electors to be free agents. We are so far removed from a society with these notions, these ancient notions of virtue that were largely exclusionary, that we should just scrap it and let the people vote.
That's Alvin Tillery, professor of political science at Northwestern University. We've been speaking with Nick Capodice, co-host of Civics 101. Nick, thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure, Peter. Thank you.
Nick and Hannah McCarthy are co-hosts of Civics 101, a podcast about how our government works, and they're taking your questions. If you've got questions about government, send them in by email. The address is civics101@nhpr.org.